It's time for Carpentaria's all-live radio show from our studios overlooking Rincon Point. Welcome to Brian's Radio Lunch Truck. And now, here's your host, Brian Moots.
Hey, this is Brian's Radio Lunch Truck, CarpentaryValleyRadio.com. I think Dennis, this is our 1 year and 2 week anniversary.
Somewhere in through there. Actually, no more than that.
Right.
Yeah, no, this is show 58.
Wow.
So 1 year, 6 weeks.
Yeah, thank you for everything. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be here.
No, thanks, man. If it wasn't for you, my studio would be a very lonely place.
Well, you know, I am on parole. So my ankle bracelet, you're 40 feet within the limit of my ankle bracelet.
That works.
You know, CarpentaryValleyRadio.com, Brian's Radio Lunch Truck, a beautiful Thursday.
Yeah.
You know.
A little breezy, but very nice.
Nice. We had how much rain did it fill?
Over the last few days, 6/500ths of an inch.
And that just adds to it. Good.
Yeah. Adding to the, I don't know, 10 or 11 inches we've gotten this winter.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. We'll take it.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Drought sucks. So.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, our guest is... I think everybody will know him by name, and if they don't know him, they'll know him by establishments. Lucky Llama Heritage?
Yes.
And Sunburst?
Yes, sir.
Anything else in your portfolio?
Not at the moment.
Okay. And Ryan Moore. So, Ryan, please tell us a little bit about yourself, what's going on, and, you know, how you ended up here in Carpinteria, born, raised, brought in, dropped off.
Yeah,
you know?
We've been looking forward to talking to you because we really love, you know, the businesses that you run.
Yeah,
definitely. Thank you. Born raised in Carpinteria.
Really?
I was born... You can actually almost see the cottage I was born in from right here.
Oh, really?
Wow.
So, at the end of Bates Road, as you come down, there's three cottages on the left.
Yes.
I was in the one closest to the railroad tracks there.
Wow. Were you born in that cottage?
Born at cottage.
Yeah, right.
and brought back to that cottage.
Right.
And... Yeah, it was cool. It was a neat way to start. You know, my dad's a surfboard builder. That's
correct.
What he's done his whole life, and I can only imagine how ecstatic he was back in the late 70s, I guess, when he landed that spot right at Rincon.
Yeah, imagine that.
You know,
all right.
He was very. You know, Rincon's a very special place.
Right. It's kind of, you know, California's equivalent of North Shore.
Yeah. For you to feel like the king of the world.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was where I kind of, you know, cut my teeth on the point. Basically, I remember running around the rocks. We'd have games with my buddies, you know, who could run across the rocks the fastest and
right.
stuff like that at low tide, and our dads would all be surfing and oh, there's dad, there he goes, you know, down the point.
Right.
They'd run, they'd be running back up, you know, you guys all right? Yeah, we're good. Yeah. And we were just in like kind of a feral existence.
Yeah. That's okay though.
Totally.
Yeah.
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 Did you do a lot of surfing? You surfed?
What's that?
Did you do surfing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Took
it
up and embraced it?
Yeah. It's actually like weirdly what led me to the coffee, which we can get to that, but.
All right.
That's interesting.
Sort of forced the hand, but
do you go out as much as you want to, or is it limited because of all your interests and how busy you are?
You know, there was a bit as I was, you know, raising, starting a family and a business and a lot of things where it became really challenging to be okay with not surfing as much because of life, and that was what I did. Professional, you know, that was everything I did was in the surf world.
And up to professional, did I hear?
Yeah, surfing for a living or a partial living, working and running the surf shop, helping with board design with my dad.
Is there any drawback to that? Because we see that lifestyle and it looks really good.
Yeah.
Very good. Is there a drawback to it? Is it just too tiring? Is it all the fun taken off? Would it have to make a living at it?
No. I mean, it wasn't for me. I think for me, I did get burned out, but I got burned out more on that. It was, I could never get away from it because it was part of my family too. So it was part of my, when I wasn't surfing or, you know, traveling, doing things. I was working at the surf shop. So it was just so much. And eventually I just got burned out on the industry in general. Like, you know, it's like, this has just got to be too much. And
it never wanes. It seems like it's perpetually popular. all the time surfing.
If not more so.
Yeah. It's, right. There was a time, as an example, like skateboarding, that kind of came and went for a little while until it stormed back big time in the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
But surfing on the water, just it's a constant.
I'm not sure if it's where we live. We do have a lot of tourists that come in. We have a lot of people, you know, who move to California. And, of course, that's one of our iconic reputations as, you know, entertainment surf. And I know that I talked to a local surfer, and Rincon is very special for a lot of people. It's a special place. If you surf or not, it's still a special place. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is go out there either in the morning or in the evening, and you can see how it is. It's just wonderful. And there was some two people from... And I'm just from France, and they had a styrofoam board out that they rented from a hotel, and this was flailing, and he was kind of insulted in a way because it wasn't taking into account the specialness of the break.
Yeah.
In other words, which is, I don't know if that's good or not, but how special that break is to so many people.
Yeah. I mean, there's breaks around the world that hold very special places for the folks around them, or they have maybe dedicated. I mean, I dedicated my life to Rincon, literally. I mean, that was, I'd be in Hawaii at our team house on the sand at Pipeline, front row center, perfect surf, and I'd find out Rincon's gonna have a really good run of waves, and I get on the next plane and fly home,
right?
You know, yeah. And the guys over there kind of look at me like, what's wrong with you? Like, Rincon's gonna break, you know,
it's, right?
And that was how dedicated I was to it. So and it legitimately is one of the best waves in the world, hands down. I mean, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Has it changed at all over the years? Has it, you know, or is it still basically the same way I say, that, you know, due to tides, due to build up, due to development up coast? Has it changed at all, or is it about the same?
I can't say that it's changed. Right. I mean, it has its moods. It has, right, its, you know, the sand. The only thing that really changes at Rincon every year you can count on is the sand, right? Mm-hmm. It comes in and goes. The rocks are always there.
Right.
Although, like last couple of winters, we've got some new ones that weren't there.
Right.
Lots of wood. Yes. Lots of driftwood.
Lots of driftwood. Yeah, you know, right, it ebbs and flows. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because you get to know the rocks on the point, which is crazy. I mean, there's millions of them, and you're like, you know, the rock you go stand on at indicator that you're going to jump off for
to get into the water.
Yeah, right. You might be walking and go, where the fuck, where'd that one come from?
Right.
Wow,
right.
How'd I get here?
Right. And it's not a small rock.
No.
Yeah.
So those are the biggest changes, sort of like when we get like big rain events and things like that. So
do you get down to the Classic each year? You check it out?
I don't as much.
I've been watching. I watch it on TV, which is nice.
Yeah.
I'm 1 mile away. You can't get near it.
No.
You know, that it weekend.
It's a little bit of a scene. But, I got... You know, part of my surfing, too, was in the late 90s and early 2000s when I was really entrenched in it. You could be a professional surfer that... You're called a free surfer. You didn't have to do contests. You might jump in or get invited to special events kind of here and there, which I would do, but the competing part of it was something that I never liked when I was young. I got into it as a means to like pick up a sponsor, which seemed cool to do when you're, you know, 13, 14, right, 15 years old. You're like, oh, I want a big cool sticker on my board and get a bunch of free shit. Like,
right,
that sounds great.
Right.
So you would have to surf the contest, local circuits and up and down the coast, kind of between, here would be like between Ventura or our Gold Coast series, Ventura to, you know, like Cayucas. And then there was other ones like Cayucas, San Luis Obispo to Santa Cruz, and then the southern end would be like Ventura, San Diego.
Right.
And all kinds of other little things in between. But I kind of ran through that phase and I was into it, but it was, I hated losing. And, you know, it was one of those things that just I didn't want to continue on with it. I figured out a way to basically like, kind of, you were able to kind of get somewhere just by, for me, Rincon, because it was my spot. So I was able to be like, okay, I'm going to represent this wave and this area and sponsored Vicky up. And so that was how I did it. So once the Classic, I was like, I sometimes entertain the thought of jumping in.
Right. How often do you go up now?
I basically surf when Rincon's good.
Okay.
Pretty much. Right. You know, I mean, actually a little bit more again when it's smaller and my kids are into it, and so they're wanting to get in the water, and It's I love it. It's great. It's like
isn't that primarily in the winter though? Isn't it the best in the winter?
Yeah. So this is the tail end of the season. I mean, that last big swell we got a couple weeks ago was fantastic, and that was great.
How old are your kids?
My son is 9. I have a daughter who's 13 and a daughter's 15.
And they all surf.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
I do lots of other stuff.
Right. Too, but. Yeah. Well, it seems like the kids today, you know, I don't have any children. We don't have children. Mm-hmm. But it seems like the children today do a lot. When I was growing up, it was either like we played soft, you know, Little League.
Yep.
Or the Pop Warner.
Yep.
Or even maybe in the 70s, they skateboarded or whatever. Yeah. Now, you know, people literally doing XXXXX, you know, lacrosse, skateboarding, surfing. Yep. You're just doing a lot. So.
Yeah. It's funny. Our kids didn't play many, you know, hardly any sports growing up. Like, in the younger days,
right.
Especially my girls, they weren't interested in it. It was just, and my wife and I weren't like sporty family. Yeah. It wasn't something we're like, oh, you got to be on the soccer team, you got to do this. It's kind of like, well, they'll do it when they're ready, and we'll be there to support them if that's the case. But it seemed like actually when they got going in junior lifeguards, it sort of brought out the competitive side of it.
That's a great program.
It is a great program. It
really is.
I grew up doing it for.
If just for anything to be water safe,
for sure,
you don't have to do anything else. Once you get to that, if you can do that, you can handle your ocean. That's really important.
Yeah, also, I think it gives a lot of kids. It introduces kids to the ocean in a way that they probably wouldn't have access to
any other way.
Maybe any other way, right? Yeah. Their family maybe they don't go to the beach. They didn't grow up at the beach. They can, you know, find that relationship with the ocean, and it's a special thing. And, you know, and that goes me being. Still, the waves get good, and I'm like, you know, it's a tweaker has got a bag in front
there
of
you. There you go.
I mean, it just happens.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've just learned recently about surf culture here, since moving out to the coast, is spots. And how fiercely protective some people are of their spots to the point that they don't want to give them away. And from what I'm gathering, really, this total layman stuff, between here and, say, Oxnard, there are a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you have to say? Do you have your spots? And, okay. I'm not asking you where they are.
No.
I'm just wondering.
I mean, this day and age, there's very few secrets.
Yeah.
That's
right.
True, too.
I feel really fortunate to have grown up learning how to surf at Rincon in the late 80s and really digging in deep into the 90s, where I was fiercely protecting Rincon, you know, my friends and I, when we were in junior high.
Right.
You know, to a
point. I know that Silverstrand had their whole crew.
Silverstrand was crazy. So,
because I went to school with those guys.
Yeah. And so I got to grow up in that era where, right, there was no cell phones, there was no internet. We had the buoy box. You go to Radio Shack and you buy the weather box for $10.
Yeah.
And you would hit the button and it would be live. Mm-hmm. The guy would be on there and he'd be reading off all the buoy reports starting from Alaska to the Mexican border. And you'd have to listen. It was a loop and you'd read it over, you know. And if you missed your buoy, you were like,
crap. There goes another 20 minutes.
So then you'd be at 5 in the morning wondering if the waves are good at Halama, and you're like sitting there going, oh, we've got to sit here for 20 more minutes to wait for the loop to come back around. But so we learned how to figure out what the ocean was doing, where the waves were good, by listening to these weather reports. You had to decipher wind speed, wind direction, wave height, period, all the stuff. I mean, it really taught us a lot.
It's a science.
It is a science, yeah. And, you know, now it's become a lot more accessible to everybody, but also in that time, it also created these tribes or gangs or however you want to put it. I think if you look back today, you're like, those are certainly gangs.
I know Silverstrand was.
Yeah.
I think, it's like I said, yeah.
Yeah, I think we had a pretty similar reputation up here. And it was kind of like, I mean, if you remember when Oil Pierce was here.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
That was kind of off limits to us.
Yeah.
Like that was like northern Ventura territory.
Oh, was it?
Okay. Yeah. If we wouldn't showed up in the water down there, even though it's like a stone's throw away, right?
Yeah.
It was, depending on who was in the water, you might get into a hassle.
Right.
Wow.
Rincon was kind of neutral-ish. We, Carpinteria and like Santa Barbara Mesa guys were, that was who ran Rincon. But it's such a big playing field. It's such a big, you know, a prominent spot that obviously people are going to come and surf it. But we always held our ground, and I think, you know, generally we had the respect.
Right. I think that's where the person I was talking to was getting at was kind of this guy came in without the skills and kind of, you know, I don't know, not understood the history of the break and what the break is, what it means. And just if you come in and you understand and appreciate what you're doing, and it sounded like it wasn't so that just got the hackles up really quick.
Oh, it sure would. You know, there was a pecking order. Yeah. There was rules of the road. There was all these things in place. Unspoken.
A Wild West kind of mentality, too, because Haskell's Beach has a great story way, too.
Oh, big time.
Armed people.
For sure.
Kept people away from the beach.
Yeah. Oh, there was vandalism, car vandalism.
No, it was like, that's our beach.
We did all that.
Yeah.
With all that.
Yeah.
Mean, you know, and you don't know if I had a ring on.
Right.
It started and stopped there.
Right.
Yeah. You licked your wounds and you split. And that was it.
Yeah.
No one had it on film. No one was getting sued.
I know we're kind of putting rose-colored glasses on the situation because if you got beat up in the parking lot, you come back, your car's disabled.
You're bummed. But it's
different, and you're exactly right. And I think social media has ruined so many places.
Yeah.
Not just natural places, but cities even, you're putting, you know...
That's where I found out about the spots.
Yeah. But, you know, it's exactly. If you, like I've told somebody, if you don't think you'll find a refrigerator 2 miles from the road at your trailhead, think again. Because that's what you find.
You're so right.
Yeah, and it's amazing. It's amazing. I want to talk to how you went from surfing to owning several really cool businesses in the town, and really, really good businesses, with a good crew.
Most importantly,
fantastic. Which, by the way, Jordan Palmer is one of them.
Yes.
Our regular guest Jordan's here.
Awesome. Yeah, he's tied up in the bedroom right now.
Oh. Yeah. Don't we need him?
He's 22.
Yeah.
he'll look at this as rose-colored glasses, too.
Yeah.
So, of course, we always say that our guest in today is Ryan Moore. They get to pick off their songs. And the first one here is Jesse Colin Young. Ridgetop, the long song, 7 minutes and 10 seconds, but it's a wonderful song.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then he'll tell us why when we're done.
Yeah, he'll tell us why when
we're
done.
That was a cool story you were telling us off mic.
Good point. All right, Dennis, hit it.
Take it away, Jesse.
All right, that was Jesse Colin Young, Ridgetop. And you had a, and this is Brian's Radio Lunch Truck. Let's get that out of the way. And we're with
Sweet
Ryan
tune.
Moore.
Yeah.
And you had a story about that.
Yeah. I didn't, up until just a couple of years ago, he hadn't entered the music.
Your personal lexicon of music.
Yeah, you know, and we were up in Mammoth. My dad, it was my brother's bachelor party, some buddies, and, you know, my dad's, he's classic. He tags along with us anywhere we go. You know, he's like, "What? That sounds like a good time. I'll be there." You know,
all right. That's a good guy.
Yeah, that's cool.
Good. Yeah,
yeah, super cool. So we're up there with some friends, and he goes, "Oh, you know, we're talking about some music and songs." He's like, "You guys, Jesse Colin Young, you know, you got to hear the song Ridgetop. It's just like the Chismahoon." We're kind of like, "Oh," when he turns it on.
Well, let's back up. Explain Chismahoon.
So he turns it on, and we're listening to it. And we go, "No," you know, the lyrics start going. So the Chismahoon Mountain, back here behind where we are currently, behind Carpinteria, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, ten different parcels up there, private dirt road. We go about four or five miles on the dirt road to get to our place.
Are you past the second gate then?
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple lock gates. So yeah, it's a real special place. The Wheeler Fire came through, I think, in '83. Started Wheeler Gorge in Ojai, that blew through and burned out everything up there. The Snyders, who owned a few different parcels up there at the time, had been living there full time, and, you know, beautiful cabin and fruit trees, and it was just this little oasis. And they were, you know, too old to rebuild, and ended up down the, I think, San Roque Mobile Home Park here.
Okay.
And somehow my dad got turned on to it. So you got to check this property out. You know, it's for sale, 20 acres. And I think at the time it was like $60,000 or something.
Wow.
Yeah. And he didn't have $60,000. So
why does that hurt to hear?
Yeah, I know. Because you got a 400 square foot dump going for $1.2 million.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that I bought that.
No, that's so well. Too late.
It's not a dump anymore.
So he got a buddy, and they scratched it together and ended up picking it up. And, you know, we bought it, you know, right after the fire. So, I mean, it was just burned out.
So their cabin was destroyed?
Oh, yeah, everything. Okay. Wiped out. So just charcoal. Right. You know, I remember just these giant... The old man had wanted to do a Christmas tree farm up there. So we planted all these Christmas trees. Well, he never got around to actually getting people up the road to come and harvest Christmas trees, right. Which is kind of an adventure in
right,
itself.
Yeah.
So he ended up with a bunch of, you know, 50-foot tall, you know, pine
trees
everywhere. Which
they burned.
They burned. And they did burn. Yeah. And so I just remember these, like, you know, I was like 4 or 5 years old, probably, driving up in the VW, you know, bug. And all these just burned out stands of trees. And it was like, I remember even then thinking it was really cool.
Right.
And he pulled the trigger and did it. And Mac Brown came up, scraped the whole piece.
Again. He has a history of that.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, he's a great man.
He was the man.
He's a really good man.
Amazing. So he and my dad went to high school together. And he came up and brought the dozer up and just scraped it clean. Just, I mean, pictures. We have a bunch of cool pictures of just nothing but the VW or the Chevy van, and my brother and I, like, covered in dirt. We planted pine trees again.
Why not?
Why not?
So
these won't burn.
Yeah, right. It'll never happen again. Anyway, so yeah, so fast forward, you know, 20 years, 15 years. We had a cabin. We had, you know, or an elaborate bum fort,
right?
You know, or whatever it was. But it was awesome, and we lived up there for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, full time. I mean, my brother and I were part time. We'd be downtown with my mom, and then up on the hill with my dad. And yeah, I mean, just too many cool experiences driving up and down that road.
So Jesse Colin Young's song really hit you when you heard the ridgetop,
The ridgetop and the pines and the chert, right. You know, which is the rock that's up there, sort of that his happy place, right? This is where I'm good.
Right.
I try not to head into town if I don't have to. Yeah. You know, right. Never felt the urgency to come down the mountain. It was just like, oh, this is great. And you have to leave. You know, it's still, I go up there anytime. I go up there and I never want to go home.
I'm like, right.
Can we just start the barbecue? You know,
why do we
throw
need
the
to
bed
know?
Rolls so, down and
fully understand.
Call it. So it's a really special place. And
your place has a view of Ojai, correct?
We overlook Ojai. Yeah. We overlook Ojai. And you know, we actually ultimately did get burned out in the Thomas fire.
Right.
So our place got torched and we scraped it again and are back at it. So.
All right. Are you building now or
is my dad is, yeah.
Okay.
He's got his cabin. His cabin's pretty well finished and
wow.
So
that had to be pretty terrifying. I mean,
it was radical.
Obviously.
Yeah. He and I were there when it actually went.
Did you
down.
Stay? Because I know John and his partner JC stayed and fought the fire. They survived and the house had made it. The house made it. Nothing else did, but they did.
I woke them up about 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I finally got through. I called them enough times and finally, I think JC answered the phone. I was like, are you on the mountain? Yeah. Get the fuck out of bed. It's
right.
coming. And they're like, what? They're just on the carp side of the ridge.
Yeah.
Couldn't see it coming from Ojai. And it was coming in. I was up there about 12 a.m. I came up in Cal Fire, was up there. They were getting forced off because they had timed out.
Okay.
And the guy who was in charge grabbed me and was like, come here, I need you. And a crew coming in from Oregon was showing up to take over on the shift, and he hastily debriefed them and said, talk to this guy if you guys need anything.
That was you.
To me.
Right. Like, so you're an incident commander.
So I'm like, and we're sitting there and everything's kind of like nothing crazy. And all of a sudden we're standing there and we get just this hot wind in our face. We kind of look at each other like, oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
And the fire completely exploded.
Right.
And I'm getting chills. Talking
about
exploded at a point where they had like their heat guns out and they're shooting it and it was like 2,500 degrees. And they're like, that's the hottest fire we've ever seen in our life.
Right.
Yeah.
The chaparral was exploding like hundreds of yards in front of it.
That's what we saw from our place.
It was covering a mile a second in its heat. In 1 second.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what we saw from our vantage point in I live at Carp Avenue, so we could see the mountain going, and you would see the flames, and so you have a wall of flame, literally,
yep.
And then must have been further, but looked like about a quarter mile away, something blow up.
Yep.
And so
that's what was happening up there. So it was just
pretty amazing.
Stampeding itself.
Right.
Fire, tornadoes going off. I watched two dozers get fully engulfed and blown over.
Oh my gosh.
They were operating. Wow. I have video of it. They like could see them running circles where they're pushing brush out of the way, then they just came together, and I watched they just disappeared in all flames. They were fine ultimately, but that was pretty radical.
Wow.
And it was bearing down on us, and I had gotten a hold of the Johns and
John JC,
and then you know we kind of just got to a point where it's kind of like shake my dad, like
we gotta go, yeah,
like it's over, man, like that's it. Say goodbye, and that was it, and it went.
I've told this before, but a friend of mine was being evacuated at Ventura Thomas Fire, and he was going, well, do I need to go? And the cop goes, we're not coming back.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, you can stay, but just don't blame us for any repercussions.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
It, because it's just they don't want to put, they no longer put their personnel in danger.
No.
They will no longer go up a single lane road to get to somebody who's been told to warn.
Yeah.
Because this happens all through, this happened before where firemen have gotten trapped. And the one I remember was the one in Malibu when a private citizen had a bulldozer, a small bulldozer, you know, like a ditch witch bulldozer, and abandoned it in the middle of the road.
Oh.
And so they're coming down, and so that stopped it, and the four firemen were killed because the fire caught them. They couldn't get out, you know. So they're like, that was one of the linchpin moments, like, okay, this is it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the situation we were in, for sure. And that crew was, they showed up in the dark in the middle of the night. They had no idea where they were.
Yeah.
They're on a mountain that has one way in and one way out.
Yeah, that road, like, that dirt road.
They're like the good part of 8 or 10 miles in. And they go, what do we do? Should we head back there? I'm all, absolutely not. I'm like, get out of here, man. Like, literally.
Yeah.
Go.
Let's go. Leave it.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do.
Right.
They would have died for sure. Right. I mean, it would have been a very bad scene had they gone further
and back, because there was just no way. Had Big Mike, or Mike Scott, from the Forest Service.
I remember that.
Yeah.
He's about a year ago.
He's married and has a kid.
Yeah.
He was talking about when you see, sometimes you'll see videos on news and people are standing around. He goes, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. There's just nothing we can do. And we're kind of figuring out what to do, but there's really nothing you can do if you have thousands of acres of flame coming at you. The head point there.
It clearly gotten to that point.
Yeah.
So, we all got off the mountain safely, but it was nightmarish. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure.
So, anyway, so that's our, you know.
So beside that, the song Ridgetop brings up good memories.
Yeah.
Offset that.
So luckily, you know, not that's behind us, but that song's amazing. And brings up all those fun times on the hill. So. Right.
Well, let's go change the subject a bit to how you got involved with coffee.
Yeah. So we talked about surfing and ultimately got to a point where I like drastically needed to remove myself from just the, and I always still surf. Yeah, and I didn't stop surfing completely, but I definitely stepped away.
The competition aspect?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, even just like being in the water, I'm kind of like, it was too ingrained in me and would create something in me when the waves were good that I couldn't ignore. So I still was getting in the water, but I really wanted to get away from the industry, the scene, the everything that surrounds it. I just wanted to be, I was happy on a surfboard in the water by myself.
Yeah. Right.
But that sort of forced the hand for me to get out of the surf shop, the family business, and my wife and I had talked about a coffee shop for a bunch of years. I grew up with Julia Mayer, who started formerly the French Press in Santa Barbara. Our parents went to high school together, small town. We grew up two doors down from each other in Contra Loma, and she had just opened their first location in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
On State. And it was going well. And, you know, I sort of was like, I should talk to Julia. And she was like, you should do it. You know, let me know if you need help. And they were, you know, amazing and gave up valuable information.
Yeah. Well, they helped you out.
I feel like gave me the confidence to
do it,
to actually go for it. And then the location of Lucky Llama my wife's family's owned that property for, I think, since the 60s, if I can't remember exactly.
How old is that building?
I get asked that a lot. As far as the actual llama itself, I believe it was added on at some point. It's not terribly old. Heritage is much older, probably more early 20s.
Because I know before you had it was Rincon Cycles.
Yes.
Dennis and Dorothy had that. Yeah, and, you know.
Exactly.
And they're happy in Oregon right now. So and that was a good location for you.
It was great. So he was there when we started the llama. The location where the llama is, you know, one night over dinner, after Ash and I kind of mustered up the courage to say, what do you think?
Right, to go for it.
You know, maybe after Martini,
right.
He looks at us and goes, well, you think you can do it? You know, go for it. Give it a shot. And, I mean, it was in bad shape. It was...
Did you restore it yourself?
Yeah. It was, I don't know, you could say tear down ish. And just the property itself was in pretty bad shape, from squatters living in the back and just kind of terrorizing the place. It had gotten away from us for a bit. So we got in there and got it cleaned up, got the folks that shouldn't have been there out, and built the thing out and got it going. And really it was just for me, I was like ready to go sell, you know, puffy jackets of Patagonia. Like I didn't right. care. Like my
you wanted to get out.
My whole background was in, I wanted out of that. My whole background was in retail. So it was something that I was really comfortable and, you know, I was like, I could do this, even though.
And where did the name Lucky Llama come from?
My daughter.
Oh,
my 4-year-old daughter. We were, we had most of it built out at this point and still had not like nailed down what we were going to call this thing. And obviously there's the Torrey Pine tree and that always kept coming into conversation, but we sort of felt strongly not to go after, you know, Carpinteria something or Torrey Pine. Really like
Carpinteria Torrey Pine Coffee.
Attach it.
You're right.
Attach it to that.
Rincon Carpinteria Torrey Pine Coffee.
Exactly. Warlow, don't leave that out.
Yeah. So she had the stuffed llama in her bedroom. It was pretty big. It was my wife's when she was a kid. And one night we're kind of getting her ready for bed. And we're like, God, we don't know what we're going to call this thing. And the wife and I are just kind of talking. And she's the scary llama.
I like that. Oh.
And we'll
see, that'd be awesome.
Kind of look at each other.
You could have like goth people behind the counter. Yeah, it's like smoky cigarettes. Like, what do you want? Can I get a coffee? Maybe. Do you like Satan? Yeah, if I get a latte out of it, sure.
Yeah, totally.
Go ahead, so sorry, llama. I'm cheap.
So, yeah, no, I kind of had a ring to it.
Had a ring to it.
Scary llama. What about Lucky Llama? I think my wife goes, what about Lucky Llama? And she's like, the Lucky Llama. And she, you know, she says it, and we look at each other, we go, done.
Yeah,
that was cool. It. It was literally like standing in the hallway at the house. Nice. And that was how it all came up.
What's been the hardest part about having that business, and you also have Heritage.
Yeah. So
how did that morph into
my wife? My wife and two of her buddies started this thing called Women's Heritage Skillshare, and this was pre-COVID. They started doing these classes, sort of women. You know, it was for women.
Yeah, banding together, making
together,
something positive.
Let's do something cool. Let's find local women who do cool stuff. Let's get them to come and teach a class specialty, you know, whether it was, you know, cooking or building or, you know, anything, right. Really anything went. Then they'd advertise it, people would pay for a slot in class, they'd host it, they'd either host it at this person's workshop or, you know, they'd find a spot to do it. Anyway, so this thing was cool. It was, you know, it was fun for them. It was, you know, maybe get a couple bucks. It was
awesome, but pretty constructive too.
It was. It was very cool. It was a neat thing that they did, and people really enjoyed it. And we kind of got to a point. It sort of, at least like that iteration of it, kind of ran its course as far as, okay, this was fun, but what's next?
Right.
And at that time, Dennis was ready to peel off and head north. Oregon at, yes. at the Ring of Fire.
I know, I helped him move.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
And so...
he was ready. Yeah, he was ready.
He was. Yeah. He was. And so and it, that was cool, too, being able to, you know, of course, being where we were and it being in the family, we said, well, can we take it over? And we kind of got our put our heads here. Well, let's do a heritage retail. Like, let's take all the stuff you guys have been doing with the classes. Let's bring in the supplies for these.
And now what do you have in Heritage? What do you sell?
A lot of stuff.
It's a neat store.
It's a neat story. So I mean, you're gonna come in, you're gonna see Patagonia, Pendleton, Birkenstock, you know, so soft goods stuff, clothing. You're gonna see, you know, handmade artisan knives for, you know, come in, you need a new kitchen knife, right. A beautiful kitchen knife. You need, you know, you're going mushroom hunting, you need your mushroom knife with your little brush.
Interesting.
You know, so much stuff. And then the stuff that goes along with it. So maybe you're going to be canning, you know, your...
So you have knives.
There's knives.
I'm missing my favorite paring knife.
There's lots of knives. There's paring knives, isn't there?
Yeah, cool. When you cook, I can cook, believe it or not. You have utensils that become your favorite, and they're never the complicated utensils.
No.
This is simplest.
Yes,
right.
This
right.
thing
you need your spoon,
a knife, yes. This cutting board, this pan.
Exactly.
My wife's gonna laugh when she hears this.
You know,
you're right.
This is a conversation that comes up a lot at her house.
You don't need anything else. You know, I use that knife like for 80% of the things. Yes. You know,
yeah.
You know, except for cutting a steak or something. But you know, for paring, for cutting, for veggie yes. preparation. This and I miss. I don't know where it is.
This is true.
Yeah. So okay, go ahead. I apologize for that. Go ahead.
No, it's it's, you know, you can get stuff for, you know, canning your strawberry harvest and making jam. You've got other odds and I mean, down to like kids' clothing and books and I mean, we sell chicken feed and
You carry Red Wing.
We carry Red Wing.
And you know, it's interesting because a certain radio host needs Red Wing shoes. Wow. They seem to be awfully expensive.
They're full pricey. Maybe we can
work something out.
Have you seen our ad rates?
Yeah. Ad rates.
Yeah. Pressure.
You seem to have really found a niche
that
works for Carpinteria. I mean, from all the stuff you describe, that's the stuff that people here want.
And also it seems to get a lot of visitors, which is good.
It does. And, you know, we've tied it into... That type of store typically wouldn't open at 9 in the morning. You'd be like at 11, 10:30. But we've definitely tried to capitalize on the coffee shops.
And you have events at the store, too.
The girls do events still. So they're still doing some classes and things. So that you can catch that probably on their Instagram or something like that.
Okay.
But I'm, you know, as far as like I'm involved, it's like the toilet's clogged or we need a shelf hung or, you know,
exactly.
Light bulbs are out. So,
see, I won't do that. You want to come over to our place? The toilet's clogged.
I've got a lot of toilets that I'm responsible for these days. So.
What's one more?
What's one more? You know, you got a big back area. You can do that. You know, I know, and also you're involved or started Sunburst.
Yes.
Okay, let's hit some music. I want to talk about that real fast.
For sure.
And so our next two songs, that's why our next two songs, I'm not queued up here at all on my little phone.
We have Jerry Garcia and Merle Saunders.
Oh, that's a great
delightful
song.
Couple
How
of
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
And
the Keystone Companion, isn't it? Positively 4th Street.
But yes. So you got these two
good
guys
song.
Doing
the Positively 4th Street is happening.
Yeah. I like Dylan.
And their version just kills.
I like that version.
Yeah.
So I hope everybody else does too.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's see if they do.
All right. This is Brian's Radio Lunch Truck. We're with Ryan Moore on CarpinterValleyRadio.com. Yeah. All right. Welcome back. This is Brian's Radio Lunch Truck, CarpinterValleyRadio.com. And I think we should mention that this show will be repeated tomorrow, 5 p.m., Saturday at 5 p.m., Monday, 5 p.m., Tuesday, 5 p.m. Dennis is coming by maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. It'll be repeated, so listen. That great music choices, by the way. And possibly Forestry. Tell us the history of that song, because you seem to know more about
it. Oh, that's Bob Dylan's... ultimate FU number. I mean, it's one of my favorite three Bob Dylan songs because everybody pictures somebody when they hear that song. Name any other song like that. I mean, that's what's universal about Positively 4th Street.
Yeah, it's a wonderful song.
You think of someone.
Right.
Almost immediately, about two verses in, you're like, oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Right, but what an awesome arrangement and rendition that was. Fantastic.
And the one before that was Merle Saunders and Jerry Garcia.
Both of them were.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
Right. And I don't know, what was the first one there?
How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You.
Oh, man. Come on. Junior Walker. Done that style.
Yeah. It was, yeah, it was good.
Awesome.
Great. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
You know, because I haven't heard that before.
Oh, cool.
So, no, I really, really appreciate it. Again, Positively 4th Street, I was telling these guys that off air that I played that twice in a row. It's just, boom, it just kept me in my seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really, really
on
nice.
On and on and on. Our guest is Ryan Moore.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Go back to that.
The proprietor at Lucky Llama and Sunburst. And we were just starting a little off-air discussion about
Sunburst. Right. We went through Heritage.
First, tell us how
we're working our way to the front. You're walking down Carp Avenue. You're going to head west 25 feet or 30 feet. And there's Sunburst. And that took a while to get going, too, because Sunburst Printing, if anybody's new, that building was in bad shape.
Yeah.
So you have a habit of restoring.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to get into the historical...
restoration
business. That was more connections, you know, Carp being so small. That was the Perry family had Sunburst Printers, started that in the 70s. grew up again 2 doors down from each other in Concha Loma. Surfed our brains out, and had way too much fun and got into way too much trouble at the state park and everything else. That was our, you know, our clubhouse, our stomping grounds, and his mom ran the print shop, typeset printing, like
old school,
big machines in there. You just go in today, you still see like there's some concrete pads in the right in the building, one kind of by the bathroom and one by the bar, and that, those were put in so the printers didn't fall through the floor. And I mean we had all of our, at the surf shop we'd have all our business cards printed there and our surfboard order forms, and Marie actually printed my wife and I's wedding invitations as a gift, which was totally cool. And then, you know, technology sped past, and I think, you know, more than anything, it left that sort of stuff in the dust in a bit.
Yes.
You know, obviously, and if you're not going to run with it, then I don't know what you do. So.
Yeah, because you have to either specialize then.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of work. And I don't know if this community, L.A., does printers like that.
For sure.
Well, and as old school photographers, too, in old development, they also have a huge population, larger population to draw from.
Yeah,
but it's a business that went into dinosaur mode.
It did.
My sister was in the business of doing blueprints on giant machines that were designed for that. Digital.
That's all,
everything
yeah.
is,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah so it, seemingly overnight, I mean.
Yeah, right, yeah, just about.
Yeah, so it went quick. So she, you know, finished up there, and my father-in-law, again, ties us back to the family, owning those properties, really wanted to be able to buy that building someday and was always, you know, touching base with Marie. So, if you're ever going to sell, you know, let us know. And ultimately, the day came, and he purchased it, and you know, as is, and it was rough to begin with. We figured, okay, let's do this thing again. We were talking about a wine bar for a while, few years, and like this would be a really neat spot. And as after he had purchased it, and it was just kind of sitting idle, and we're figuring out, okay, what's going to happen with this thing. We ultimately decided to move forward with it, and digging into that building was at first not too shocking. We knew it was bad, and so we got the, you know, it was all plaster, like you know, knob and tube electrical. That
old school, that's original electric system.
That was, I think, the deets at 1920 on that on that building. So peeled it all off, got into the walls. We're like, okay, this is doable. Well. At some point, we decided, God, we're going to replace these windows. We're going to do this. Maybe by the time we can do that, we got to patch all the stucco. Maybe we should just lose the stucco and
go
fresh slate. Well, when that happened, that was which we couldn't see. Stucco, no tar paper.
Nothing.
So, I mean, corner posts didn't exist. They had vaporized into
termite. Oh, they've been termited
literally gone.
Right.
We couldn't see it from the inside because it's wrapped with, you know, 2x4 studs, and we're assuming it's all there. I mean, when the stucco came off that building, it was like a day today after a rain, big northwest wind was blowing. I remember Woody, the contractor running the job, he just yells at the guys, he goes, "Go get 200 2x4s," and they ran to Carp Lumber. and just started bracing the building up because it was, he was seriously worried that literally could blow over.
Wow.
And that was when the real work began. Yeah.
And the full picture.
Okay.
Who did design work for it?
Well, the design...
Because it's really nice.
Yeah.
Kevin Moore.
Really?
Yeah. So no relation. His wife is partners with my wife, one of the partners at Heritage. He's an architect in Santa Barbara. He did all the drawings for it, and we kind of cooked up that layout and design, and then Jordan Bottenfield Construction did the build.
Because it looks nice.
Yeah.
The deck is so key to it all. Did you vision that when
yeah,
you...
Yeah, for sure. That yeah. was,
you
that
need
was,
to expand out.
The deck and the roll-up door, those were the two things that were two of the most important sort of pieces of it that I felt strongly about. I was like, we need to push this thing on as far as we can go. And there was that, where the roll-up is, was just a big, giant, like, 6-foot window. And they had, like, a big fixed pane in the middle and maybe, like, some casements or out on the sides. And so we just pulled all that out and replaced it with the roll-up and gave us that big opening, which has been nice.
Without naming it, you know, what hours do you... What, let's hit that right now. The hours for Lucky Llama are?
So Llama is 6:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m.
And the address is?
5100 Carpenter Avenue.
And Heritage?
By the big tree.
Yeah, by the big tree. The big tree. Yeah. And then Heritage is?
Same address, 5100
and the hours?
They're 9 a.m. to... 5-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. The business is good.
Hey. Yeah, it's 6. Yeah. It varies a little bit.
Of course, Sunburst is.
Sunburst, 5080.
Right. And the hours, because are you closed on Tuesdays? There?
Tuesdays, yeah. Right. We're closed on Tuesdays, which has been nice. Certainly nice for the boys in the kitchen.
You have Dangberger there.
Dangberger is.
How's that working out?
Yeah, great roommates.
Right. Yeah. Oh, good.
Great food. Yeah. Good stuff, man. I bumped into you there last week.
Yeah.
And we were talking off air about this red hot issue of live music.
Yes.
You've got live music there. There have been times I've stepped out of the Alcazar and I've heard that live music, but I like it.
Yeah, yeah. That was you know, it's weird I say that was a...
Are you still having live music, or are you waiting to see what the city does?
We're pumping the brakes on it right now. you know, ultimately it was... The timing coincidentally worked out because the stuff that came down with the complaints and then through the city pretty much timed perfectly with Dangberger launching, which filled that
area
void. Yeah. Right. Filled the area for
right,
sure.
Where the bands were, the areas where the band was set up.
Yeah. Ultimately, I mean, as it stands right now, it would be a little bit tricky trying to host the kind of stuff we were doing before.
Did you find any pushback from the city on your modernist design? Did anybody figure it wasn't Carpinteria's design?
I wondered that too. When I moved here, it kind of looked like it was like a little touch of Santa Barbara right there.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
It is. So all the lines in that building are original. Actually, and all the windows where they are on the building are where they were before. We basically replaced everything. The big change was the roll-up door.
Okay.
The vestibule in the front where you walk in and the big thing. So Architectural Review wasn't super happy with the vestibule. It was like a darker shade of gray, I believe, gray stucco to offset from the building, just to give
a little
bit
of dimension.
Yeah, sure. They suggested we do this paneling that's on there, which was, you know, kind of like what you see at gas stations, like metal paneling.
Oh yeah,
interlocking. Right. You know, kind of just wrap it. That was not us. You know, we were kind of like, and just because it had been a little bit of an uphill battle, whatever. we can live with it.
Yeah.
As far as a modern design in the building, that's what it was.
Because it looks good.
Big box, you know. Yeah. It's kind of super angular. And we didn't really mess with that at all.
How did you choose what wines to carry?
And beers.
And beers. Yeah.
You know,
the proximity to Carpinteria, local.
Yeah, for sure. Trying to stay local with the wines that were domestic. We wanted to keep it as close to home as possible. There's obviously a ridiculous amount of great wine very close to us. So
yeah,
you don't have to go far to find that.
No.
Wasn't really interested in Napa. We get into a little bit of like the Willamette Valley in Ohio, Oregon. Put out some great wines. We that's right, you know, for this Washington occasionally. Right. And then other than that, with some of the imports, you're going to see there's a couple Italian wines on there. We don't go deep in the French thing, but we do really like the Austrian, German,
your whites. You know,
the Europeans, yeah, wines, and do some reds and some whites from there. And that's those wines we like because they're almost all organic, biodynamic, you know, minimal, you know, natural wines. And they've been doing it that way for
generations.
Yeah. Yeah. A long time. That's right. So it's a fun region to buy from, and we really like their stuff. So.
Well, how did Dangberger get involved? Did they come to you and said, you have an area? You need it?
No, you know, they...
we're tired of pulling our trailer.
Yeah. Oh, man. I feel for them. That is not an easy thing to do, the pop-ups. I mean, I have like a little taste of it from doing coffee pop-up stuff, yeah, which mm-hmm. I quit a long time ago because I said, this is just way too much work.
Oh, it is. I was in Palm Springs every Thursday. They have a marketplace.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see everything from almonds to doodads, yeah, to T-shirts, honey, you name it, all, you know, prunes and dates. And there was a guy there, and it was a puppy food. And I'm telling you, it just looked like he had just drained his 401k. I'm going to make $1 billion off this organic dog food. Ooh. And I know the conversation he had with his wife. Yeah. I had that, but he had this 1,000-yard stare. Like he was looking off, like, and you could see, like, what am I doing? What did I do? Yeah. And it was, you know, nobody was there, and I felt really bad. I almost bought a 15-pound bag just to. But we don't have a dog, but you know, but it's tough.
The pop-up thing is tough.
Yeah.
Pop-up thing is tough, and
it's a gamble.
It is a gamble. I mean, for them. Their pop-up was wildly successful. I don't think it was wildly financially successful, but it was, they couldn't, I mean, they would sell out everywhere they went.
Yeah, they did.
Great following. Right, right. They were doing a fantastic job with what they had to work with. And, like, honestly, more than anything, I mean, the two things were, they put out a great product and they worked their asses off.
Right.
And I could saw that a mile away.
Right. There's really no other way.
No, there isn't. And if you've been in it, you know. But they, you know, all had gigs in the restaurant industry, you know, higher end, nice restaurants doing good food, the kind of food I like to eat. So they knew their way around a kitchen. They'd done pop-ups for us at Sunburst, which were always super successful. I had a partially built out kitchen space that we kind of had plans to do some different pop-up type things out of before COVID. COVID raked us through the coals like everyone else. And by the time we got the doors open there, I basically didn't care if the place burned down.
Right.
The next day. Like I just...
You're done.
The doors just had to be open. Right. And we had this space just kind of sitting there. We had dabbled. And then I knew I didn't want to run a kitchen. I've got the llama. I've got enough of that in my life. I do not want to be in charge of another kitchen. Right. And so I kind of just actually let it sit idle and figured, you know what, we're going to focus on the beer and wine thing. And it got us two and a half years down the road with hosting live music, which was a great draw. That got people.
It really was. You filled the house.
For sure. That was huge. So we basically put all of our, you know, advertising dollars, if you, you know, whatever we had to put into, like, saying, hey, this place can be fun, we put it into live music. 100% of it.
Back to the pandemic, 2020, 2021. Were you? I forgot because the hours are so different, and of course the protocol to get something was changed. Were we allowed to sit outside, or was that banned
at
the Lucky Llama?
No. At one point, they wouldn't even let people sit outside.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
I had tables outside because I'm thinking.
We're outside.
Logical person, yeah. You know.
I'm outside, like, 6 feet apart.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Code enforcement comes down. You gotta get these chairs out of here. I'm like, what do you mean?
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, they had us
down. I forgot. I just remember that you just go in and get a coffee and leave.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. So yeah. We only shut down for a few days. Actually, right. all said and done. I mean, we you know, kind of, whoa, this is so weird, and recalibrated. Kind of, I was like, okay, how can we do this? And you know, rearrange things, and said, okay, well, let's just keep it going. And there was days when we would go, you know, 7 to 10, and we just leave.
right,
you know, or whatever. We just kind of played it one day at a time until we got into like, okay, people know, people got comfortable, I think, with the weirdness going there, and actually turned into kind of like people could go and grab a coffee, and then they would kind of disperse.
We would disperse out on the property. I would sit on the stump.
Yeah. You could actually have a conversation with someone, yeah, and there's no one driving down the street. Right. And it was just the most bizarre thing in the whole world. So.
It really was. Wearing our masks, staying 6 feet apart.
Yeah. Which I had no problem with, you know, at the time. You know,
no, I was living that life anyway. A lot of people said, stay inside and don't. Okay.
What I found in our community, specifically our community, seemed to have a high ratio of businesses that were quick on their feet.
Yep.
That yes. pivoted, could pivot.
Right.
That sure. weren't adapting. Moribund. Uh-huh. Like, this is what we have to do. We'll do it.
Yeah.
And seemed that they survived.
For sure.
Because that was a tough 2 years.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. By contrast, you look at other communities, Santa Barbara, where so much was leveraged and so much was riding on just the next month.
Yeah.
They just felt like dominoes. Yeah. You know? But not here.
That's a good point.
A little more resourcefulness and people month to month are on top of what they do. Yeah.
And I think our community, we had, I know that we did, when I say we, our neighborhood, including my wife, we supported businesses consistently.
For sure.
And whether we had cash or not, we had credit card, because it was important to have, and all their names like Delgado's, you know, Lucky Llama, going, and it took, Thario's, Santa Claus Lane, it took effort to do that. It was kind of our contribution to our community.
Yeah,
was put money into the community.
That was our part.
Well, it didn't go unnoticed. I mean, that was.
I still haven't got a free coffee.
Well. Have you seen our rate card?
Yeah. Red Wing shoes. Oh yeah. No, but you guys did, and you have a good spot for that. I mean, it was kind of officially couldn't do it, but I'm gonna come in and kind of walk into the field.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean,
the police were fine with us. Yeah. You know, they weren't. I think hassled.
We were very lucky to have the community and the support.
Yeah,
you know, all for everything. I mean, it's been. I don't know. I still feel like we're all just. I still feel like I'm trying to figure it out. Like I haven't.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, is this happening? It's like imposter syndrome.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's since I've moved here. I'm like, this can't be real.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're lucky. People.
And we've always,
word is always in the conversation.
And we've always said that if you are kind of not in that vibe, and the company does have a vibe, it kind of, you mold to it eventually.
Yeah.
Right. You'll stand out. You'll be tarred and feathered and run out, you know? Watch your P's and Q's.
You can drive a new Ferrari, you'll eventually. You'll still get rid of it, get a Sprinter van.
Yeah, right. You can live in the parking lot. That was happening.
Yes, I know. I go by at like 5 in the morning or something, and there's like 3 Sprinter vans there.
Especially the income. You know. Oh, my gosh.
What do you do?
Oh, my God.
What did you do about that? Did you do anything?
No.
Yeah, good.
You know, I if people are behaving themselves,
right?
I try not to bust their chops too much. Yeah. You know, it's like, I don't know. Some of that at the time, it didn't seem like a big enough deal to.
It's not worth it compared to what everything else is going on. Yeah, and you have somebody like they're not doing anything, and they're using it to the land. They're fine.
Yeah, they're not like. I think they were generally pretty self-contained units, if you know what I mean. So there wasn't like. You know, they weren't like shitting in the bushes. And,
no, that's what we'd find on the 150 off ramp.
Yes.
For truck drivers.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, Dennis.
That's my beat.
Yep. There's that kind of stuff. You know, they weren't thrown. Right. You know, there's no trash. So, and they generally wake up in the morning and then
go.
Come in and get their coffee and hang out. And
it's the transient life. That means they're always moving on anyway.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
Obviously, with the pandemic, and it's still. The effect of mobile being able to work almost anywhere. Did you find a lot of people who discovered Carpinteria and were able to work? They might be down from San Francisco or out even from the East Coast, and they can still work. They got their van and they kind of discovered this place and stayed.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, Carp changed a lot during that time. Probably the biggest changes I've ever seen growing, you know.
In what way? How do you feel?
Like you said, it was discovered in a way, you know, and a lot of people have driven past Carpinteria their whole lives. You can't really see it.
Right.
You're on the 101. Next thing you know,
Here. It was up, yeah.
Oh, we're at Santa Claus Lane. That's where the guy, there used to be the Santa Claus on the roof. And there, you're halfway to Santa Barbara, and Carp was in your rear view mirror. So that's kind of, we've always lived like that, which was really neat. Occasionally people would stumble off and discover it, and they think they discovered something, you know, they're like, right. Which is kind of cool. And, but yeah, there was definitely a big shift in unfamiliar faces.
Yeah, I think you're right.
There was that small window of time, I want to say 17 or 18, where before everything dropped off and was no longer affordable for anyone,
yep.
For a little year and a half period there, you could actually get a place for and sure. You could actually afford it. And I think that's what that was the little time you're talking about. It's like the CARP kind of expanded right there. Now we're contracting again.
We are.
Because of those home prices.
Right. You know, you're right about 2020 because our beaches were open,
yep.
I believe, after 2-3 months into.
Yeah.
LA counties was still closed, so we'd see people along Santa Claus Lane.
Yep.
And obviously the campgrounds were full. Yep. Everything was full.
I mean.
And people just come up to get out.
At a certain point, it got crazy.
Right.
I mean, we got so busy at the coffee shop, which was amazing to be, you know, it was interesting because we were, you know, there were some of those businesses who were like weirdly thriving
right.
during this thing and others that were just completely sucking wind. And it felt really unfair, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, I'm super thankful.
Yeah.
Right.
But it also yes. did get to a point where it was like, we needed a break.
Right.
You know, just, for my, you know, ourselves, our staff, you know, there was just no downtime. It was kind of like the summer thing that happens, but it went for like
a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 years.
Straight.
How's staffing been for you? It seems it's been pretty good.
Staffing's been really good recently.
Right. Yeah. You've always had a good crew.
Yeah. The crew, it's, you know, obviously it ebbs and flows, but it's been really good the last better, you know, year or more. There was, post-COVID, they were still giving out free money, and you know, very few people were looking for work. And we got to a point where business was doing well. We didn't have the people. It was right. Like, we would, like, there was days where we just wouldn't open the kitchen. It'd be coffee and pastries only.
I
didn't have anyone to work.
Well, I mean, you close the kitchen down a certain time.
Yeah,
if you did have it open, it'd be closed at 11 or 12,
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, I've got kids. You know, manager Caitlin's got kids, and I'd kind of gotten to a point where, well, this, it was still working, but was still, you know, making payroll and doing what we needed to do. And I was like, there's so many years where I picked up the slack on all of it.
Yeah. Oh, welcome to owning your business.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And we still do, but COVID taught me a lot to like let go a little bit.
Oh,
and
cool.
Like, oh, it's okay to like knock off a couple hours early.
Right.
Like, it's not gonna, can't get any worse than it was
right,
you know, a year ago or whatever.
So we, as a person that myself who's dealt with the public for 30 years, mm-hmm. And I have some great public stories.
Sure.
What's your worst public person story without IDing anybody? What's your worst customer?
Or are there too many to count?
I have one in your shop. I have one. I know already.
I bet
for
you
me.
Do.
Who I stood behind. Then we'll go to music.
There's so many.
There's so many.
Now you deal with the public. You have the cards that you're dealt. You know?
I've always said there should be a bar where the only people allowed in are people who deal with the public. So you're like, okay. I'm an accountant. Yeah, I'm sorry. You can't come in.
You cannot
come in. I'm sorry.
Yeah, lots of security.
I'm a clerk at a 7-Eleven. Oh, the major chair for you.
Yeah, yeah. You get the lady, you get the cozy one. Yeah, the public's wild, man. The way they treat people, you know, or treat people in the service industry, and what's it? I mean, oh my gosh, yeah. Just I think just like the rottenness people can have in there
right.
when they're just ordering a cup of coffee.
They take their day in there with them.
They do.
It's like when you drive, you know,
you
can get all pissed off at somebody, but you don't know the kind of day they had. You don't know what they're thinking about, which is not driving.
Yeah.
Or, the same situation.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So
some people are just rude.
Yeah.
That's true. then there are
And there's the ones that are just over and over and over again.
Right.
Yeah. Or they you know, there's a few that do things repetitive, you know, where they keep showing up and they keep complaining and they keep being rude. And, you know, at a certain point, why do you keep coming back?
Right.
Like, if it's that bad,
right.
By all means, like...
Yeah, there's other places.
You can go.
Yeah.
You can go, you know.
You can go.
But for me, it was like, I was... What time? You opened at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 6:50. I was in there, and there was this guy. It was just... And he had his little tasty cup. He goes, is this organic? And he goes... And I forgot what was behind the guy. I said, yes, it is. He goes, from where? And it's like out of Portlandia.
Oh my god!
Yeah, you know, do you have the name of the chicken? Yeah. And he's like, "How do you know it's organic?" Well, our distributor verifies. Who's your distributor? And it's like, I was like, "Oh my god!"
Oh, the whole third degree,
you know, and what farms? And it's kind of like, and what did you name the bean plant?
Pretty much.
And I was like, "God!"
And he's not writing any of this stuff down.
No, he's just being a freaking cup in his little hand, and he said, "Well, I don't know. Thank you very much," and left.
Yeah, they don't.
Was like, and I timed it. I was like, "Hey, 1 minute.
What do I? What? How do I have to answer to make you go away?
3 minutes.
That would be like
2.5 minutes. And everybody behind the counter was really, really good.
Yeah.
I was just cracking up.
They've gotten
there. Everybody else, though, I've witnessed has been really nice. So, but, yeah, you know, I'm not there.
No, generally speaking, we would, you know, it would be great. We're great clientele, and people are happy, generally happy to be there.
Yeah. I think Carpentry is like that. I don't see too many instances.
Nah.
I do catch it.
Yeah.
You know, roll my eyes.
Yeah, but it's, you know, well, not like other places. Yeah.
From everything you're describing, you're doing a lot of things right.
Right.
It seemed like just about everything. Like I said, people... keep coming back, and you're in steady demand. So props to you, man.
Thank you. We want to
talk to you about these things for a long time.
Yeah, that's nice having you on. I've learned a lot.
Best veggie burger I've had in the area. Dang Burger.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, dang.
Outstanding.
Those are good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are good. They're really, really good. And your whole, everything's good. The coffee shop, Heritage is good.
Thank you.
Sunburst is really nice to visit.
Best people and watching place busy. And car.
It's gotten busy. It's cool. Yeah, it's been fun.
Any other plans for the future?
Not right now.
Right,
I'm trying to enjoy the kids while they're still around,
doing
their thing and making it to sports games. And
right.
That's the focus right now. After getting Sunburst open, I was like, okay, they're not, you know, they haven't totally got their wings and are off.
Right.
So it's
enjoy them.
Yeah, that's
definitely
that's you can. You're at a golden time right now in parenthood.
It is. Trust me. Yeah. We don't have kids, so I know.
Yeah.
So if you want advice on kids, just let me know, because you'll find people without kids will give you the best advice.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. You know what you should do.
Yes. Well, I had one, and this is why I'm telling you, enjoy it while you can. Those teenagers, this 13, 14, it goes right down the drain. So enjoy it while you can. It's coming.
Just be ready for it.
Your kid held up a gas station.
Oh, come on. I keep bringing that up.
At 11. It didn't give you any of the cut.
Yeah, the kids are all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan, thank you. We're going to end up. This is Brian's Radio Lunch Truck.
Thanks, you guys.
And CarpenterValleyRadio.com.
Got a couple more tracks.
And we got two. What are we listening to, Dennis, to lead the song?
The good old Grateful Dead to complete the thought on the Merle Saunders and Jerry Garcia tracks. And they're going to do Jack Straw for us from the 72 Europe album.
Nice.
And we got Towns Van Zandt, an eclectic, awesome name. And I'll be here in the morning. You sure don't hear much Towns Van Zandt on the radio.
And that's another good song. I'll Be Here in the Morning is a great song. Yeah, it really was. Really a twist on it. And I enjoyed, again, one of the songs I listened to two or three times in a row. So I thank you for that.
Yeah, man.
I really do.
Yeah, you know. Breath of fresh air.
Okay. Thank you, Ryan Moore. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah, good.
Headed out to get a dang burger right now.
Okay, there you go. All right. All right, guys. Brian's Radio Lunch Truck. We're out of here.